This feels a bit to me like a pub chat. It's just got, it's got out of hand.
Crucially, the end point is it's an 84% downtake at the top level of professional teams. That's mind-blowing.
I don't think it's quite as easy as people think.
No.
Yeah. To cover a mountain with cameras and get it back and all that stuff.
Do you have any lines for Donald Trump Jr.? You could like
get him in on Downhill. I'd probably rather not have him in on Downhill. Welcome to episode 5 of the Global Mountain Bike Show. This week, we're talking about the dream bike garage and what bikes we'd have in them. We're talking about the decline of enduro racing, plus the enhanced games, and could doping come to mountain bike racing? I'm Neil Donohue, Fergus over there, and we have Adam join me this week. And actually, we've got a few good topics, starting with sort of dream bike garage, which is something that probably everybody's pondered. You know, what that would look like and actually what style of bike you would, or bike, should we say, because dream bike garage has got to mean racked full of bikes, surely. And we might have to slim this down a little bit, but, you know, what would you pick if you had the choice of any bikes? And I think mine would definitely include some mountain bikes, e-bikes and motorbikes as well, because that's a proper dream garage for me. Luckily, you know, we're all very lucky to be supported by companies that lend us bikes to use. So our garages probably do look pretty dreamy. I know for 15-year-old me, I'm living the dream of my garage at the moment. But yeah, how would you slim it down? Or actually, let's start off with what you would pick. Ferg, if you had a quiver, you didn't have to choose one bike that would be a bit compromised everywhere and you could rack them up. What would you have?
Okay, so kicking things straight away, I've got to have a downhill bike. Just for me, having a downhill bike is, I don't ride them loads, but when you do ride a downhill bike, there is nothing like it. I'm sure you'll agree, Neil. It's the most insane feeling. So that would definitely be it.
Agree. And when, you know, I guess you boys watch the race of the weekend, I love looking at some of the tech that's there nowadays as well. These bikes not only sort of look amazing, but they really, the way they can track the suspension on laptops, like the technology's moved on along since I've done it, but it's pretty cool high-tech stuff as well, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing bikes, and I just love getting back on them. It's been probably one of the best bits about coming onto GMBN is just getting back into that downhill world, having spent a long old time on the enduro side of it, getting back in a shuttle. And
was it a while that you didn't ride a downhill bike for?
7 years, I think it was. Yeah. So yeah, big old gap. I think in 2017 was my last downhill bike, and then that's only 9 years. But yeah, it's a long old time to not have had one. So yeah, that would definitely go first in my garage. I would then have to have my trusty Tyee. I've got a propane Tyee. It's 160/170, an enduro bike. I think just where I live and what I ride, I love going out for big days. And obviously that bike just allows you to go as fast as you possibly can.
Still pretty sort of efficient to pedal around. Don't feel too bad.
Super efficient. Yeah. I mean, again, enduro bikes have come on such a long way since I first raced enduro. I think my first enduro bike was a 130/140 YT Jeffsy.
Was it? That's quite short, isn't it? I didn't know it was that short travel.
Well, it was full 29. It was the first one of the first full 29. So I went for the wagon wheels in the idea that it would roll faster. I got to Madeira and very quickly realized that it was a lot rougher and a lot harder than I thought. Bikes come on so much since then. So, and it probably weighs, I think my enduro bike now probably weighs the same as that bike did back then. So yeah, definitely would have one of those. An e-bike. I have recently, literally last week, I got back from riding my first ever Avanox e-bike and it blew my mind.
So you were out, where was that? Boise, Idaho?
Boise, Idaho in America.
Hard MTB. That was all over Instagram, seeing crashes, people getting hurt a bit as well. But it looked like a pretty cool event.
Yeah, I mean, incredible event. I was definitely part of the crash reel on that. I think I had more crashes than I've had in the last 5 years in one event. But after the event, with what was left of my battered body, I got to get on the propane Econo 3AL and it was insane.
With US speed limit on there, it's quite nice as well, isn't it? It goes up to 20 miles an hour, I believe, isn't it?
Cannot be complaining about that. It was insane how quickly it went up a hill. But also the power was super smooth. I think for someone who, I've not ridden loads of e-bikes, so I wouldn't say I'm used to the power delivery. And so sometimes it can catch me by surprise, but that one was really, really smooth in terms of the way it sort of just gave you that little bit of extra power. That being said, I did do my first ever climb sections of trail.
Did you do the hard MTB League ones? Which like sort of steppy.
So I didn't do those on an e-bike.
Oh, right.
I did that on my Thai trail.
Must have been pretty difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I'm terrible
at
it.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be hard.
Yeah, it turns out I needed another 5 years of riding up hills on technical climbs. I just don't have that trials ability. I need to get on a trial.
Have you
bike.
Seen, obviously, this event is organised by Braden Bringhurst, or at least his sort of his concept. And he did that video a few years back of riding, what was the trail in Moab?
The whole enchilada back.
Going upwards, which there was one section he had to repeat over and over and over, which looked super hard. Yeah. I know, Adam, you know, Ferg's down the gravity end of things, you're the more pedally end of things.
Yep.
Have you ever sort of jumped into technical climbing like that, sort of gnarly stuff?
Not out and out. Obviously, you go on a ride, you get met with something that is a bit loose, a bit rocky, you just sort of power up it. I've not really thought about it too much. Like, you might stop and sort of scout it and then go up, but I've never really gone out with the intention of...
Same, actually, yeah. Even though, you know, I'm down Ferg's line with the downhill stuff, but I've never... It's a bit of a new challenge for me, or has been, since I've started riding e-bikes, but I still don't find I go out looking for it. No. If it's there, I'll have a go.
It's like after the ride Jonesy and I did in South Wales a couple of weeks ago, again, that was my first experience on the Avanox bike. And I think if I were to spend more time on the e-bike, I would go chasing climbs like that. Because I think that's where I would find the challenge with that bike.
Yeah, definitely. I think, Steve does a lot of that. So, Ferg, how many have we got so far?
We've got three. We've got down a bike, enduro bike, e-bike.
Yeah, I'm sure that's enough.
I think so, but I can't not have a dirt jump bike in there as well, because that's where I began. That's where I started out. Hardtail, very simple, no gears, one brake, set of dirt jumps. Yeah, amazing bikes, and I think they're cheap, then they're easy to repair and replace and things like that. And you learn all of your base skills. I'm still convinced of that. No one has convinced me yet that you can learn that same level of skill on any other bike. So for me, I'd have to have a dirt jumper in there. But yeah, that's crazy, right? Four bikes in your dream garage. And then, like you, I've recently got the bug of the motocross bike. So I have got one of those in the garage as well. But We could leave that one out. Yeah. I think four bikes is more than enough.
So Adam, what are you thinking? You ride a gravel bike a lot?
Yeah, so I think, because I enjoy such a vast style of riding. Yeah, you've got to have a gravel bike. Again, it's great for commuting, great for if you just want to get out in the woods and not like terrify yourself down some like gnarly trail or thing, just go and enjoy it that way. Something short travel. So I guess we call it like down country now, sort of 120, 130. Right. So
yeah, I can see, you know, back in my day when I just had my first bike, which I did everything on, you know, you really couldn't do everything very well on it. Whereas now you look at those down country bikes and think you could have one of those and ride anything, really.
Yeah.
And it still feel fast.
I don't know. It's not marketing gumph. I don't want to use that phrase, but they do descend like they are bigger bikes, but then they climb as efficiently as say like an XC bike would.
Mm.
So on your big all-day adventures, short of actually riding down the side of a mountain, you're pretty well covered.
I don't think we see anyone really at World Cup cross country riding hardtails anymore.
No, I think those days have shifted now. Yeah.
Seems to be getting a bit longer of travel, if anything. But
yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose, how big would you go? What's the sort of max travel?
So max for me is probably 170, 160. So like Ferg, I've got a Tyee, but the aluminium one.
Yeah.
I've gone as far as I've got an extra 500 grams strapped to the bottom of it at the minute. Right. Yeah. It's for a bike that big, it feels really playful. Like with a coil shock, I can't get my head around it, but it is just generally the nicest big bike I've ever ridden.
So, that's cool.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I've got a lot of bikes in my garage at the moment. Most of them I don't have the time to use. So I've got like a pub bike, which is my old retro mountain bike, which I do love having. I've got a pump track bike, which I'll use a couple of times a year. I take the kids to the BMX track. But nice to have. I guess if I was talking dream garage, I would have a downhill bike, but I would probably pick something like something retro, because I wouldn't use it very much. Something, you know, get a Honda in there or an R01, something like that. Sit there in the corner, which would be very difficult, because I think there's only a couple of those knocking around nowadays. I think what we were talking about earlier, Greg Minar's got one in his shop, I think, in Pietermaritzburg. But really for me, I think, you know, an e-bike then and a trail bike, probably a 150 mil trail bike would probably be the that's the one, you know, because if we're talking about dreams here, but actually for the bikes that I would probably use, really an e-bike and a 150 mil travel bike is plenty. And actually, Ferg, I've borrowed your Hugene, which is slightly shorter travel than that, but I've been really enjoying it. It's for a video coming up actually, where I've gone back and I've given up the e-bike for a little bit of time to see how it feels to get back pedaling a mountain bike. And I've got to say, I felt terrible first time. It wasn't the bike. I just felt so slow, sluggish. And it's taken me 2 or 3 rides to get feeling good on it. And now it's great. And I think, yeah, man, I'd love to keep hold of that bike.
Absolutely not. I will be putting in the request for having that one back very soon. On that note, though, obviously we are in such a luxurious position, and obviously dream bikes aside, do you think that you could just have one bike in your garage, or do you think it is a case of having to have two?
Yeah, like I said, I think for me, I would probably just pick a 150 mil. Yeah. You know, like, I don't really know what. I haven't really picked out a brand, because I've ridden quite a few of those style bikes, and they've all been really good. The how light they are nowadays, even the aluminium ones, they pedal well, they go downhill well. You know, the geometry suspension is all so good that I'd happily ride one of those. Yeah.
Okay. I think, yeah, something around that for me as well, because I think Owen and James explored it recently. They're two essentially identical bikes, so the Hugene, one built slightly lighter, so like an XC build, and then a slightly burlier trail build.
Yeah.
And so I think that just highlights the versatility of that sort of shorter stroke mid-travel bike. Yeah, so for me, yeah, I'd stick with that sort of downcountry-esque build and then just maybe have two different builds for it.
I think it's definitely one of those things, like we were saying, like when you were a kid, when I was 15, my XC bike, just the capabilities of that were very, very niche to one genre. Whereas I think nowadays it's very difficult to find a bad bike. And I do think that one bike can go across three genres very easily. As proven when I did the Hard MTB League, it was 4 different disciplines and I had one bike to do it. So that I had the Tai Trail, which was 145, 160. And it was super good uphill. Super good downhill, really, really capable bike. And I just think that, yeah, it is possible now to kind of get the best of both worlds. Obviously, dream garage aside, yeah, one bike, I think probably you'd go for a downcountry, maybe the Hugene if I could ever get that back, but potentially a little bit more travel.
It's so tricky because when I started, it was going back a long time, but there really was only sort of hardtails. And if you had the money, you could start upgrading it. You know, there were early full suspension bikes, but you didn't have the choice. You either bought a cheap one or an expensive hardtail, you know. Whereas now, if you're getting into mountain biking, I think still people should try and start on a hardtail, but what's the next bike? You've got to sort of decide a bit what you want, and there'll always be a bit of a compromise somewhere. But there's so much more choice than there ever has been, including e-bikes. And that's kind of what I talked about in this video I've just done, is like, you know, what happens if you just ride e-bike solely? I found that I was missing a mountain bike a little bit, but there is particularly quite a good secondhand market at the moment. So, you know, you don't have to spend a fortune. No. It's kind of like me, like we're talking about motorbikes. I've just sold my old one. I bought another really old bike because I don't want to be spending loads of money on, I don't have the money to be spending on new motocross bikes. So I've bought a 1998 model that is a lot cheaper than new, obviously. But obviously that is like another bike. You know, I've got a garage full. But I think, you know, people could get a second bike for, you know, a reasonable deal nowadays, I suppose. Yeah. And we'll look into that, I think. You know, talking this morning about video ideas, about what we're going to do coming up, and maybe picking one of our dream bikes from a few years ago and seeing if we can track one down for a reasonable price. And I think they're out there. Particularly if you look on Facebook Marketplace, there's a load of bikes in the UK at the moment that look really, really good value.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, saying that, what was the dream bike when you were 16 then?
16 was probably Mountain Cycle San Andreas, which I bet you, do you know it?
No idea.
Or a GT LTS DH. That's probably a little bit early for that still. But yeah. You boys?
What were you?
I must admit, I got into riding a little bit later than that, but DMR sled.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that the little full suspension thing?
That was the, what was it, 160, 160? Yeah, yeah.
Jono and Deeks sort of piloted that one in many slices of pie, I think
that
it was.
That road gap in Surrey, that one.
For me, 2016 was the first year I committed to downhill. and I'd been riding downhill on a cross country bike for a while, and it had not been going so well. I'd been breaking a bike left, right, and centre. But I actually did get my dream bike. I will confess, my mum and dad surprised me. I got a Monster Energy Sam Hill demo, and it was the most insane bike. And I just, that's like seared into my memory.
Was that the double swing arm?
Yeah, double swing arm. Yeah. It had the Monster Energy green and black. It was, it was way more bike than I was ever capable of riding.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it justice, I don't think, the entire time I owned it. But it was amazing. It was so cool. And every day it was like the best day ever whenever
I still got it?
I haven't, but a friend has.
Oh, right.
So I know where it is. It was number 146 out of 250, nice. And it was best bike.
To dig it out, because try and ride that, see how it compares nowadays.
It'd be so cool. I looked at the reach numbers on it. Crazy. It was 400 and... No, let me get this right. Yeah, 425 mil
reach. Oh, my goodness.
In a medium. Like, I can't even imagine trying to ride that now.
And what, but we're 485, 480?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, I mean, it, but that linkage system worked amazing, and it was, yeah, it was so cool.
Well, it worked for Sam Hill, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so quickly then, Neil, your three bikes?
Definitely have the Honda downhill bike. I'd have a 150 mil trail bike and a hardtail as well.
Nice. Ferg?
For me, it would definitely be, I'd have to have a downhill bike in there, I think.
Yep.
An e-bike now, and probably a short travel trail, but I'd have to steal back the huge in off of Neil. I think that would be definitely in my garage.
Nice. Cool. And then for me, I'll be going gravel bike. It's a given at this point. A downcountry bike. And then, yeah, my enduro bike. So biggest bike you're willing to pedal. And actually, on that note, let us know down in the comments what your dream three bike garage would be. Or if you just got that one bike to rule them all, what is it?
Moving on to a bit of racing, actually. Well, more, you know, there's a lot of racing from Newland Vela weekend, some carnage in downhill across, but I want to talk about sort of the trajectory of enduro, really, because particularly me and Phil have got a bit of experience with it. Mm. But this year, there's been kind of a bit of negative news. Dan Booker announcing his retirement, the guy who got second last year. Yeah. Really talented all-round rider. But also, if you sort of look into the numbers of this, so this year, 2026 World Cup Enduro Championship, there's six rounds, all of them in Europe, which I guess tells a bit of a story.
It's not very world, is it?
Exactly. And I don't remember a time when that's, you know, even downhill has always been biased towards Europe for sure, but there's always been North American rounds. And even this year, obviously, it's going back into Asia. When I started, I raced in Japan, Brazil, America, Canada, all over Europe, and enduro is going the other way. So as well, the sort of participation numbers, I think, Ferg, you've done crunch the numbers on this. I think there are only five official teams this year. Is that right?
Yeah, five registered teams, which blows my mind. I think when I first started enduro in, I think it was 2016, there were 29 registered teams and 630 competitors. And I remember trying to get an entry for that first, when I did my first enduro race, and it was like, you had to be so quick. It was like everywhere, it would sell out immediately.
Mm. So it started in 2013 with 220 competitors. Yeah, sold out almost immediately. 19 registered teams. And actually they used to do the EWS 100 and the 75, was it as well? Like kind of amateur ride along races as well. So the numbers were massive. It'd be a massive circus of pros and amateurs racing at the same time. And it's definitely not looking like that at the moment. There is still coverage coming out of it. But, there have been a few. Who else has walked? Eddie Masters has recently retired. I know he's probably getting slightly older as well. But
Jesse Melamed.
Yeah.
Like big names. Three-time World Cup overall. Jack Moyer.
Yeah, of course.
Again,
yeah.
Crazy. Like we've lost, and Richie Rude, who's what, four or five time overall champion, has moved across the downhill.
We saw that with Martin Mays as well. Sort of.
Yeah.
I don't want to say pressure from manufacturers, but definitely there was a feeling that the big sponsors want to go where the eyeballs are. So I think Martin, felt that and went downhill, and has transitioned really well to downhill.
Yeah.
But we've got a sort of. Think about what could be causing the sort of this downward trajectory of enduro. Adam, got any ideas of why we might be seeing less participation?
And I think obviously the sort of the budget and the drive towards, I don't want to say e-bikes is a thing.
I mean, you got to think probably the reality on the ground for a lot of these places. Look at UK, and people that would have bought enduro bikes in the past, you know, people like me who would have ridden them in the past, aren't really riding them that much now, or they're buying e-bikes that are, you know, longer travel e-bikes, and not buying the Santa Cruz Nomad style bike anymore, I guess. Yeah.
And I think that that's what's changing the interest. I think we've had this discussion a few times, but if the bikes you're riding are electric and then the bikes that are being raced are non-electric, then that just doesn't make sense. No one's going to be bought into that. So I do think that that's partially why we're seeing that shift across from, or a downshift in enduro. And then we haven't had the EDR kind of kick off the way it did, which is a real shame, because I don't think that ever, in my mind, I don't think that ever really got given a chance. It had maybe one season or two seasons of the e-bike enduro.
Probably a couple. I can't remember. It's a funny one, isn't it? I find I really like riding e-bikes, but I have no interest in e-bike racing, or at least the e-bike racing that I've seen so far. It just doesn't bite me. I don't want to watch it. I don't want to follow it. But I wonder if that's because it's not been done quite right just yet. But I don't know. You know,
I want to see multi-stage for me. And I'm sure you'll correct me on this. Like I said, I haven't ridden loads of e-bikes, but for me, the usage of an e-bike is maxing out as many runs of descent as I can. And the endurance side of it comes from how many runs can you physically hold on down to? And like an e-bike gives you that ability to do so many laps. I mean, imagine having you can have a 13 stage enduro where riders are just physically shattered trying to descend down the gnarliest stuff, and then they're able to e-bike back up. I mean, how cool would that be?
It is a perfect bike for the discipline that is enduro, getting racing down and getting to another one somewhere else on the mountain. But
then would you need to cap your battery size, cap your motor output?
There's all sorts of there are all sorts of problems with it, and it, when it comes to level playing field, I suppose, which is also a bit why, I mean, I find that a bit with enduro, where people were going there a week before and practicing, and that is a much different vibe to someone showing up and essentially racing blind. You'd have done one run, but you know, that's it, and then you race down. And I felt, so I did the first round in 2013, and I thought that wasn't cool, which is why I never really got into it.
Yeah.
And I think obviously that, you know, the level playing field for e-bike racing is more difficult to enforce as well. So I don't know about it. I think, you know, watch this space with enduro racing, and also if anyone picks up the baton for e-bike racing. And I've also felt like in the past they've tried to make it hard, really hard, when I think they should have been concentrating on trying to make it really good. I don't know what that is.
I've heard rumblings of new series, new styles, sort of revamping enduro. I think going back to its roots a little bit, of fresher trails, changing locations. Because I think that's one of the big reasons. Like, I know Eddie on some podcasts has said that he finds enduro, he got bored of going to the exact same location, which I think was one of the reasons that downhill had a downturn as well, was because people got bored of racing the same tracks over and over again. I think downhill have kind of recognized that. They started having new locations, and even if they're on the same locations, they got new tracks. And I do think that enduro, when I first started, and I'm sure same for you, Neil, we rode the most raw tracks, and it kind of felt like old school downhill, in that you were, you had like really raw tracks just riding between the tapes, and it was who could be most creative. Whereas I'd say now you're riding down goat tracks that are very well established, very one line. And I just don't think that that necessarily, from even from a rider's perspective, is necessarily that enjoyable. And I think at the core, if it's not enjoyable for the riders, it's definitely not going to be enjoyable for the viewers. And I think that, again, that leads to less viewership, less money in the sport. And that's a real shame, because like, I love the sport, as does Rich, as do yourself. I think it's a really, really cool sport. But yeah, it definitely needs a revamp.
It's always been really, really difficult to cover properly, which then I don't think was ever really solved. But also, I sort of have sympathy, because I don't think it's quite as easy as people think to cover a mountain with cameras and get it back and all that stuff. You know, maybe it is easy, and I think with the technology we've got nowadays, but it's pretty full on. And I know there's some controversy with Warner Brothers Discovery, and even now people having to pay to watch the World Cup downhill and cross country. You know, obviously I love it. I love watching it. And I do feel like they're riding quite a good wave at the moment, of big teams are really pushing it, pushing the budgets on the cross country and downhill side of things. And it's just not happening in enduro for whatever reason. So I feel like that's a shame, and it's only going one way at the moment.
But the thing that I'm struggling to grasp with all of it, obviously at the top level of the sport, it's declining. But if you look at like grassroots level and sort of the middle ground within that, so you've got things like Enduro 2, Transmadeira, the Squamish Enduro a couple of weeks ago, they look mega and there's loads of people doing it. And yeah, they're still doing the EDR Open because I've signed on to a round of it in August.
Yeah.
So
where's that one?
What's the far?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So there's still a want for this discipline, I guess, at, I don't want to call it consumer level, but
for
not
sure
pro level.
Yeah. I think that's where I think if you look at the sport, if we were to be critical of it, at the EWS level, you had it had that participant level in that, you know, your average Joe or your weekend warrior could go, I want to go and ride the same tracks that I watch the World Cup pros do. And they'd almost make a holiday out of it, but they'd go with their mates, ride some amazing tracks, have a good time. And that brought that participation level in. Whereas now it's very hard to access that and do that exact same thing in the EDR. And I think that was maybe one of the big shifts that we saw when Warner took it over. Yeah. I do think that was a big shift. But the other thing, I mean, crucially, the end point is it's an 84% downtake at the top level of professional teams. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I guess, like I say, it's, you know, it's just not getting the eyeballs that other parts of mountain biking are getting. Mm. Probably part of the industry as well, like selling e-bikes, not enduro bikes. But I don't know if there'll be a turnaround on enduro racing, but I guess we'll find out. But, you know, there was a race of the weekend and the usual suspects were up there winning it.
It was still quite tight in those podium spots, which is interesting. So there is a spectacle there. Like there is a story to watch unfold and like follow along with. It's just, I think.
But you guys back at home, let us know down in the comments, what do you think? What do you think the future of enduro is? Should enduro become the e-enduro? Should we see more of e-bike enduro? Or do you think that it will eventually come back? Or dare I say, is enduro dead? Let us know down in the comments below for sure.
Well, getting on, so next subject is the enhanced games.
Oh,
maybe this is
enhanced enduro. Exactly. Let's go.
You got me thinking. I mean, it has been slightly enhanced in a few cases in the past when people have been busted. Not that many, actually, but the enhanced game. So, I mean, I don't know much about it, but it's basically, you know, like the Olympics, there's swimming, there's track and field stuff.
Yep.
But the participants are allowed to use FDA approved what we call them what's the word for it?
Performance.
Supplements.
Supplements, yeah.
So we're not talking about full on doping here, are we?
We are talking about full on doping, but they are being managed. So it is being managed, it's one singular source of product. So
this is the enhanced bit. I went on the website today. They sell all sorts of things.
Yeah. But they are selling, so you know, HGH, I need to know more about my doping drugs, but you know, insert here drug performance enhancement, you can EPO, any of these things, you can take them, but they are monitored by professionals throughout the course of them taking the drugs in the run up to the event to ensure that it's being taken properly. There are the relevant safety protocols, and obviously, because I think that is one of the key concerns with people, is that, you know, people are just going to juice with no concern to their personal health. So it is monitored, with the idea being that it is the ultimate spectacle of human performance. Now,
like it actually was, though, because there's only one record broken, I believe, in swimming.
Yeah.
But this feels a bit to me like a pub chat. It's just got out of hand. But actually, there was $25 million worth of prize money, which is obviously quite an incentive for people that don't mind. I mean, you know, it doesn't feel right to me ethically, really, because who knows what the long-term side effects of this might be.
Yeah.
And it's not something that I would do, but people are doing it out of their own choice. Having said that, if there's $25 million there, you know,
$500,000 for one race. All I'm saying is, if you win $500,000, there was this one of the swimmers said that it was 13 years worth of world titles in one race they earned. So, I mean, and you look at enduro and downhill, 500k prize purse. That's how many seasons. How many seasons would Bruni have to win?
Well, a lot
in prize purse.
What I was interested in is, like, where's the money coming from? like which companies are sponsoring this that want to be associated with it. Mm. Well, actually, money's coming from a few places. Peter Thiel, who's quite a controversial character, he was involved in the PayPal, he's co-founder of that, sorry. Donald Trump Jr., other sort of notable venture capitalists, and also there are sponsorship from sort of streaming companies and things like that. So obviously it's made quite a lot of noise. Mm. Having said that, on the Financial Times is saying that the money's sort of financials don't really add up and the sort of share value of the company has dropped quite a lot since its launch. So, but obviously quite controversial, and also the companies involved with it, I think, take some of that controversy as well. I think, Adam, are you interested in this?
I am. I think they were maybe expecting more spectacle from it. I don't know, like superhero level performance, and like you're saying, there's just one record that got broken in the swimming pool.
Bit of an anticlimax, for sure.
Yeah, that.
They've one of the things that I have found interesting though is obviously we're a cycling channel, and the reason for bringing this up is they have mentioned that one of the biggest sports that they want to bring in for 2027 is cycling. Now, I mean, that's a pretty crazy one. And their argument for the reason for bringing in cycling is that it would bring transparency where there is hidden enhancements. So they're essentially claiming that there are enhancements, which, we'll gloss over enhancements in sport. And this would create a transparency and also potentially bring to light those who have been doping, because if they're like equal to these dopers. Now, the argument being is that doping would immediately make you better. I don't necessarily agree with that, because I think in every sport of cycling, skill has such an impact. So
obviously there's never been much doping or public doping that's been caught in mountain biking ever. There's a handful of cases that I can think of over the years. Obviously our colleagues on the roadside channel, there's been a lot more on that side of things. So I don't know if mountain biking would ever be involved in this, but I don't think there's any point with, but I could probably see why on the road or on the track that they might think this is.
I wouldn't even know what supplement to take to improve. I mean, enduro, maybe a bit of EPO might help you.
No,
but
I don't know. It just seems like such a dangerous thing to get into when skill is, like I say, it's still the determining factor even for enduro.
Yeah. I think that's it, isn't it? I mean, the thing you see in downhill and enduro and cross country is that there is no one size fits all. Like you don't see some absolute muscle hamster winning all the races, it's definitely, there's so many different body types and body sizes, and they all make it work on a world level. So I think that just highlights how much of a skill-based sport we take part in.
I think in all my years of downhill pro racing, two people that I know I've got popped for drugs, and it was both marijuana. It was not it was not necessarily performance enhancing. So I don't think from my perspective, I know of none in World Cup downhill, at least.
In enduro, I had a few. We had a few cases.
Yeah. What you had? A few cases of.
Come on, my result sheet definitely didn't have any performance enhancing on there. But I think that there were definitely a few rumours going around the pits and stuff of some teams and
rumours.
Team members, but again, not that any of those people had ever done anything, then won the race. So it was always like, well, even if you are enhancing, like, what's the point? So it'll be interesting to see. I think what will be more interesting to see is mountain biking as an Olympic sport. And I do think that's where this money side of it, I'd love to see, that would be the only main benefit I would see of the enhanced games, is it would put mountain biking in front of the media, give it more media focus. And I think that would potentially elevate it. Obviously cross country is in the Olympics, but it'd be so cool to see more genres of the sport in the Olympics in the future.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about sort of outside of the sport, funding, sponsorship in the past and how that might bring more money to the pros, but it's not really there at the moment.
Do you have any lines for Donald Trump Jr.? You could like
get him in on downhill. I'd probably rather not have him in on downhill. Someone with deep pockets, maybe with deep pockets want to throw a bit of money. I guess, like we've talked about it in the past, but people like Volvo and Diesel and Grundig isn't really a household name anymore, don't think.
Grundig.
No. But it was.
Showing your age there, Neil.
Toyota were involved. They were in British down at least. But love to see a bit more of that, if it was going to help the teams get bigger, pay their riders, you know, prize money a bit better for so these pros can get the rewards. Although I think Loic Brunie is driving around in a Porsche 911.
Yeah, I think a few of them are doing all right, aren't they? I think. But yeah, definitely would love to see the sport grow, and I think that that's maybe where this as well, the enhanced games is bringing the prize money, is that's where it's got all the media attention, and obviously I think that's making a statement. And that was actually interesting about the Hard MTB League as well. They had 120 grand prize purse.
Did they?
And they're really trying to make a statement.
Where's that coming from?
So that is from a few different, again, outside investors.
Is it?
One of the co-founders, he floated his company, but he very much believes in the idea that mountain biking could learn a lot from other sports. So he's put a big prize purse on there because he says that the risk should be worth the reward, and or the reward should be worth the risk. So yeah, it's interesting to see that there are sports, or there are competitions out there, US Open as well, big prize purses. So it would be cool to see, again, like you say, outside sponsors coming in. I'd love to see that a bit more.
I won 2,000 euros for coming third in a snow race. It's called Teen Airwaves, like a four cross race on a border cross track.
Oh, yeah.
And the winner was, you know, it was probably 8 grand euros. And that was, I don't know if Airwaves, was that like a chewing gum sponsor? Yeah, I might be making that up, but yeah, it's crazy how these one-off event found the money to do it, whereas the World Series seemingly can't. They think they pay 3,000 euros for a win.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we all agree that like to see the athletes winning more money.
But potentially not enhanced games for mountain biking.
Let's see.
On the subject of enhanced games, let us know down in the comments below, what do you guys think? Are the enhanced games here to stay? Would you love to see mountain biking in it? Or should it be banned, and should we just forget all of this and go back to the pub?
I think, well, it's too late for me. I think I need to get, you know, that guy who's doing all the anti-aging stuff. I think that's what I need to get on rather than the doping. Well, I'm not sure what he does take for all that
stuff. I heard you have a good contact for Just For Men, mate. So well, if you've got it, I could definitely use
I'm more worried about it than her. Right, that's it for this week's show. EP5, we're knocking them down. Come back next week for the Global Mountain Bike Show.